As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everyone, welcome to this live room on Wednesday from sunny California. Beautiful day here in California. As Canadians prepare to embark on what is somewhat of a definitive trip for them early on this season, really feel like there's a lot of factors that the Canadians are trying to prove to themselves, or a lot of things they're trying to prove to themselves, prove to their coach. And won't only come down to the results tonight in Anaheim or Friday in San Jose or Saturday in LA, but really with how they perform, whether they can really meet their own standards. So there's been a lot of kind of talk about the things they're trying to improve here. That's what we're going to find out. So in the meantime, thought I would do is listen. I know I said earlier this season that I'd be doing these every Wednesday. I'm going to be perfectly honest. It wasn't part of my normal routine. I kind of just forgot about it for a while. So I am going to try and do these every Wednesday from now on. Can't promise it'll be every single Wednesday, but I am going to try and make this a more regular thing so that we can interact and talk about things. So I'm just going to give a few minutes to see if the room populates. As always, comme toujours dans le fond, je peux prendre les questions en français si jamais vous voulez les demander en français. C'est bien correct. I was just saying I could take questions in French, obviously in English as well. So if you do have questions, I can take them off the chat. But if you want to jump on stage and ask something live, audio-wise, feel free to do so. It's kind of like talk radio where you get to jump on, have your say, ask a question, make a comment, basically say whatever you want, and let's do it. So no one on stage yet, so let's kind of see what's going on with the chat. Let's start with Philip, who says Slavkovsky needs to tape his blade properly. He's losing the puck way too easily in scoring chance opportunities. Funny you mentioned that. Actually, you know what? And I had a long conversation with Slav today and I forgot to ask him about it. But at practice this morning, at the morning skate this morning, Slav had a fully taped blade on his stick. So let's see what he goes with tonight during the game. This is kind of funny. This is the first question we're addressing. But I did notice during the morning skate today, and I'm actually kicking myself now that I didn't ask him about it. He had a fully taped blade. And there might be no more scrutinized thing on this team than Juraj Slafkovský's tape job. It is something that his teammates give him a lot of flack for. Did go back to his old wonky just at the end of his blade tape job for a while, but this morning I did know it's really weird, Philip, that you asked me that, because I did notice the full blade taped up this morning, and so tune in tonight. I guess, to see if that carries over to the game. But he definitely had it that way in practice. Thomas, I see the two of you on stage. I'm coming to you in one sec. I'm just going to answer Thomas's question here. Hey, Arpin, meant to ask this on the pod, but may as well now. Any long-form thoughts on the Quebec government's fantasy about the Nordiques returning and the LA Kings preseason game fiasco? Do I have long-form? I have a lot of thoughts on it. I don't know if I want to go long-form. I find it quite ridiculous that the public has already subsidized the construction of that building in Quebec, a building that is gorgeous, by the way. If you've never been to the Vidéotron Center or the Centre Vidéotron in Quebec City, it is a beautiful NHL caliber building. It's absolutely stunning and deserves to have an NHL team. Having said that, public money was already used to subsidize that building. It was built with no promise of an NHL team coming. Not only no promise of an NHL team coming, no likelihood of an NHL team coming. It was already clear at the time they built that building that the NHL was not exactly enthused by the idea of expanding or moving a franchise to Quebec. They still aren't. And so now that there's already a partially publicly financed building that remains empty too often, and now they're throwing more public money to have preseason games at this building that was already publicly subsidized just to promote the notion that the NHL team should play there, when it was always clear that it was very unlikely that an NHL team would play there, is insulting, frankly. I can't get my head around. It's a pretty inconsequential amount of money, not to you and I or normal people, but to a government. $5 to $7 million is a drop in the annual budget. It's not a massive, but the principle of it, when teachers are striking right now, the government's saying we all got to tighten our belts, there's not a lot of money to spend, to make that subsidy now is just politically and just from a common sense perspective, it's ridiculously awful and just spectacularly dumb. So maybe that was long form, but that's how I feel about it. Thanks for the question, Thomas. Okay, let's go on stage and see who's up. We got Brian G, who's up first. Brian, can you hear me? Brian, can you hear me? I, however, can't hear you.
Hear me now?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Good. Okay, I was about to jump on, get my headphones on. Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. What's up, man?
Okay, great. I just wanted to ask about Jeff Poole.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously a holdover from the previous administration. You've talked a little bit in the past about his reluctance with playing smaller players, the AHL being a pretty physical league. But
yeah.
I just wonder how you see him fitting with the rest of the coaching staff. Doesn't seem to be as much of a nurturer as St. Louis. I just wanted to know your thoughts about how he fits in with the rest of the kind of coaching and development staff.
Well, one thing I would say about JF, actually, I could say a few things about JF, is that he's not cut from the same cloth as St. Louis, but I think he's very much on board with the stuff that the organization as a whole is trying to do with developing their players. And he's not, he's not impossibly rigid with this notion of playing smaller players. Sean Farrell's getting plenty of ice time because he's earning it right now. So I think Houle was skeptical that a guy like Farrell and Kidney, Meshar, when he was there, would be able to thrive as rookies in the AHL. Not that they would, be forever struggling at the AHL level, but to him, the transition was going to be tougher for those guys just because of their physical makeup. But to his credit, he hasn't stuck with that. He hasn't played Farrell sparingly because he's producing right now. He's performing really well. I mean, Kidney's another issue, but he's not. But the one thing that's good about Hull is he understands the American League, and the American League is not the same as the NHL, and it's not a league that where you can run your team the same way. There's so many different dynamics in play at the AHL level that you don't really have to deal with at the NHL level. But one commonality at both leagues is that you have a group of 20 men every night wearing uniform who are going out to try and win a game. And to some of those guys, development is important. To others, not so much. And you have to balance the two. And that's something Marty has to do at the NHL level as well. And so when you have guys like Mitchell Stevens or Brady Keeper or Brandon Gignac or like all these kind of AHL veteran type of guys who are trying to, you know, they're scratching and clawing to keep their professional hockey career going, it's hard to sell that I got to play this kid who's clearly struggling because I have a mandate to develop him. Now, that does that mean he doesn't play that kid? No, of course not. But it's a balance that needs to be struck. And I think Hull has a very good understanding of how to do that at the American Hockey League level. And so I think it's important to have a coach in the AHL who understands the dynamics of that league. And sure, JF Hull, like any other coach, wants to one day graduate to the NHL. But I think he has a very clear understanding of where the organization is at, what his mandate is with some of the young prospects. You know, this is an unprecedented number of young NHL potential prospects at the AHL level for this franchise. It's been a very long time since they've had this many. He gets that. But that doesn't mean he's going to, that doesn't mean it's the only factor in how he does his job. So I don't know if that answers your question, Brian, but he seems to be an appropriate coach for the group that they have there. You compare it to the days they had Sylvain Lefebvre, for instance, and this is night and day from that.
Well, yeah, and I think the measure usually is how many players you're graduating. And a lot of the young players that came in last year, which is really, you know, the first full year of the new administration, a lot of players kind of skip that step. Harris, right. Jack Guy, Gooley, guys like that. So it'll be interesting to see, because now it seems like this is this first real crack at a bunch of young players like Kidney, Wah, players of that ilk, to see in a year or so, can he be graduating them, and what kind of players are they when they come up?
But even last year, I mean, you look at how seamlessly HP integrated the lineup. You look at how seamlessly Ilonen integrated the lineup. You know, I can't think of all, but there were a ton of examples last year of guys who had played under JF, who got the call because of just the triage going on in Montreal, and fit right in. And some of them in HP's case, thrived. And so, you know, that's also a measure of what he's doing down there. But I agree with you that this is the actual big test. And you know, to his credit, like Joshua was getting all the minutes he can handle. You know, and why wouldn't he? He's producing. And so it's not as if he's being sheltered late in games or that he's being treated like a rookie or treated like, you know, he's playing in important situations, critical times in games. It would be really easy to throw a veteran on the ice late in the game, up a goal or whatever. But who's not doing that? He's sticking to the plan. And I think, you know, even though the wins and losses haven't necessarily been, but it's going exactly the way he said it would. Well, before the season started, he said the first half of the year is going to be tough. I think sometime in January or February, when our young guys figure it out, we'll start to get some wins. So it's hard to complain about anything going on in Laval right now, from my perspective.
Great. Thank you, Arvin.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate the call, as it were. Okay, we'll go to Matthew. I see you there, Anonymous. I'm coming to you next.
Hello.
Okay, Matthew, you there?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, Matthew. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
I'm good, thanks.
I just had a question about the development, but not of players, but more of the coach. So Marty St. Louis started last year, and I just wanted to ask you about how you've seen his development, maybe in pressers, where does he give off the energy of being kind of like still being like a veteran in the room? Or do you think he's kind of evolved more into being a head coach? Because they're two very different things. And it's like, I'm hoping, because I've been having this argument with my friends for the last week where, you know, you have a tough first two periods, you're going into the third. Is he giving kind of like a veteran speech in the room, or is it more of a head coach speech? And then just post games, does he act like a disgruntled veteran, or like just stuff like that?
Yeah, Matthew, it's a fair question. And I think it's something that Marty himself is grappling with at times. but he definitely, he's unique in the sense that when he was a player, he spoke like a coach. So for him to act like he did as a player is kind of a natural thing. What he's, what the difficult part is learning when to drop the hammer. And you know, the timing of your question is excellent. Cause to me, since Saturday, from Saturday to now, and we'll see what happens tonight with this game in Anaheim, but from Saturday to now has been his most head coachy kind of days. Saturday night in Boston comes out, says the team played soft. Like, probably the most biting criticism of his own team that he's had, you know, but it was necessary. It was true. And so, so he did that, ran two really difficult days of practice, very specifically focused, but a lot of instruction and a lot of tough love. Listen, he had moments in both those practices where he stopped practice, chastised the guy in front of the group. Chastised is maybe a strong word, but challenged the guy in front of the group, did head coachy things, was not a cuddly veteran presence or player type person. He was a head coach and he was addressing the group as such and had them do wind sprints after practice on Monday, just before getting on a plane to California, you know, it's, which we hadn't really seen too often, and said afterwards that this is accountability for how they performed in Boston, which is a very head coachy thing to do. So, so, you know, I don't know if you've had this argument with your friends for the last week, I would say over the course of that week or the second half of that week, I don't know what side of that argument you were on, but whoever was on the side of he's more of a head coach than a veteran player would have a lot more ammunition now than you did a week ago. But generally, he carries himself a bit like a veteran player in the sense that he, all the players respect him. He's able to talk to them on their level, but it's there's no confusion. Like, I think when Kirk Muller was an assistant coach in Montreal, not to say that there was a confusion, but he was such a player's guy that the line between being the player's buddies and part of the coaching staff sometimes felt a little blurred. And I think he's evolved since then as a coach. Talking about Muller, Marty was never quite that blurry. Like, yes, he could talk to players on their level, but it's pretty clear he was an authority figure. And it was pretty clear that he's trying, that he's there to give instruction and that, that you better listen to what he has to say or else it's not going to go well for you. So, so that line was a lot darker, I think, with Marty than with other coaches who kind of blur that line. So, but yeah, definitely over the last 3 days, it's a very relevant question, I feel, because we've just gone through the last, the most head coachiest time for Martin St. Louis with the Canadians, you know, since he got hired.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Thanks. Just a quick follow up on that. Cause I've been watching, especially with championship teams. So the Pittsburgh Penguins, when they went back to back and they had Mike Sullivan, they still have Mike Sullivan as a coach. And if you watch those games, he's on the bench, like screaming 100%, either grilling the refs or grilling the players. And then with the Habs, they get the most penalized team in the NHL. And when the camera cuts to Marty, he's got his head in his hands. You know, there's no, he kind of just accepts it. There's no fight back. And I'm just wondering, do the players take advantage of that?
That's not true. Maybe the cameras don't catch it all the time, but if he has, he picks his spots where he goes after the refs.
Yeah.
He's done it many times. Usually he calls them over to the bench. He's had very, very pointed conversations with referees, some of which have been caught on camera for sure.
Okay.
But, you know, every coach has their own style and not one is is you know, Mike Sullivan has his. I think, I don't know, Scottie Bowman was pretty demure behind the bench. Like, generally, I mean, there's, you know, there's all sorts of different ways to go about it. But I think he has his moments where he loses it behind the bench. He doesn't lose control, but when he's angry with a referee, I've seen him let many referees know it quite animatedly. And if you read lips, it gets quite nasty. So but sometimes when the ref is right, that's when I think you see Marty being like, yeah, well, that's us. You know, I mean, it's so you can't argue every call. You need some credibility with these guys. And if you pick your spots properly, then those tirades or those pushback moments with the refs can actually be useful. If you do it all the time, they become white noise and they're useless. So that's, I guess, what I would say to that. But thanks, Matthew, for the question. I appreciate it. What side of that argument are you on?
Well, I told my friends, because they do a podcast and they were looking for talking points. So I told them, like, I've been watching. Well, it was funny because you had mentioned with the wind sprints, and it was literally the day before that. And I had said, I think he's a little soft. And then, of course, a day later, I see videos of them doing the sprints, and I'm like, oh, love it.
All right. Hey, you want to plug their podcast while you're here?
Yeah, their Habs Culture.
Habs Culture. All right. Check it out, everyone. All right. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Ian, who I think is a frequent participant in these. Ian, can you hear me? Are you there?
How's it going, everyone?
Yeah. Hey, I'm good. How are you? Yeah, I can hear you.
That's bad, man. So I'm going to ask you a question that I heard yesterday on Tony Marinaro ask Eric Engels on the Sick podcast. In terms of playing style, what kind of identity do you think the Habs have right now? And what kind of identity do you think they're searching for in the future?
I think the Habs, the identity they're searching for right now, I would say they don't really have an identity. What they want to be, which they're not right now, but what they want to be is just a relentlessly forechecking team who comes at you in waves and overwhelms you with speed and energy and tenaciousness. And basically, because of the makeup of their lineup right now, they want to be able to go lines 1 through 4, coming at you constantly, pressuring the puck all over the ice and making life miserable for their opponents. That is their desired identity, as far as I can see. That is not what they're doing at all, but that is at the basis of their preparation for this game was, you know, not just forechecking, which traditionally you think of the word forechecking, you think, okay, you dump the puck in and go after it and hit guys. For them, forechecking is pressuring the puck everywhere. And that's what they want their identity to be. They've just fallen way, way short of that. And that's what makes tonight's game so compelling. Like, let's see how they respond, because that's been the singular focus for 2 days of practice right now. Plus, they had a morning skate this morning, which is very unusual. And Marty said that it was the players who decided that they should have a full morning skate after 2 straight days of practice, which so far this season has not happened once. Every time they've had a game day following a practice day, they have taken the morning off. So the players said, no, we should go skate. Take that for what it's worth, but it's an interesting change in their routine. So it's, you know, I'm very intrigued to see what version of this Canadiens team we see tonight, because they seem to believe that, you know, they need to draw some sort of line in the sand. And I think that identity that they're seeking, we're going to get evidence tonight whether they're anywhere close to finding it, because that's what I think they want to be. How did that answer compared to Engels?
Engels basically, I think, said they don't have an identity right now, but what they're searching for is, you know, he was kind of talking about, you know, what does a Stanley Cup winning team look like? And essentially, they're all kind of similar in the sense of, you know, just puck possession. They want to have the puck. They can play any different style. They take the game to you, you know, and they just kind of like intimidate you, essentially. So,
I would say that is down the road. They've got there's an identity they need to play with now that will not be the exact identity they have when or if they become an actual contending team. But it's, you know, the version of the Canadiens we've seen in the last two games is nor even close to being a respectable hockey team. So it's they have a challenge in front of them, but this, they are trying to lay the groundwork and the foundation for what will eventually become some sort of contending identity. And watching the Ducks tonight, it's going to be a similar kind of vibe. You know, they have, you know, I was talking to Mason McTavish this morning. They had Leo Carlson in the room there. Obviously, Zegras is kind of banged up, but they've got their blue line is just stacked with talent.
Leo Carlson, first line center tonight.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, they're going mano a mano, man. And so if I'm a young player on the Canadiens, if I'm Cole Caulfield, if I'm Nick Suzuki, if I'm any of these kind of core foundational guys, I want to look good tonight because it's, you know, it's just another layer of what makes tonight so compelling.
Can I just ask you a follow-up question in terms of, again, going back to playing style?
Yeah.
What do you make sense of when you watch the Habs, the way they played against Vegas a couple of weeks ago, the first game in Vegas, which I think Marty called the best game he had seen since he had been became coach?
Yes, that is what he called it.
The Boston game. Right. And then the Boston game. Like, how do you...
The second Boston game.
Is it just a young... The second Boston game. Like, how do you make sense of that? The difference in...
Well, I mean, this is... Listen, I mean... And Marty said after that Vegas game, is like, I think the players have shown us a new standard, right? And so if your standard is the absolute best possible version of yourselves, then maybe that's an unfair standard. And I think that's what the game in Vegas, the first game against Boston, that's what we saw from the Canadiens. This is how they can play. This is how they can play, possibly. This is where if everyone's going and everyone's bought in and everyone's got their legs moving and everyone's pulling on the same rope in the same direction, this is how good this team can play. But, you know, I don't think anyone's standard should be the absolute best possible version of yourselves all the time. Like, that's impossible to meet. You just cannot do that on a day-to-day basis. So the standards for this team, a realistic standard, is somewhere in between that Vegas game and the Boston game. You have the two ends of the spectrum there. So it's unfair to expect the team to perform at the level that they did against Vegas. And it's unfair to expect this team's going to be as awful as they were against Boston. It's somewhere in the middle. And as close as they can get to the Vegas side of that spectrum on a consistent basis, then that's a win. But the danger with this team, they are a young team. There will be inconsistencies. There will be mistakes. Is them having sort of their median standard be closer to the Boston game. And that's what they're trying to nip in the bud right now. I mean, that's why, like, Marty has had such singular focus and really has done a lot of coaching in the last 3 days. Is because what he saw in Boston was something that had to come to an end. And it had to be, so I keep saying this, but I mean, tonight's game, I know it's going to be on late, but it's worth watching because this has been established as a test by Marty for his players. And which version of yourselves are you going to show more often? And so we'll see. We'll see, but it's pretty evident that the question you're asking, that's what they're trying to answer, is who are we? Which version of us is closest to reality? And it's not necessarily going to be answered tonight, but you're going to get the first taste of how they respond to a pretty overt challenge from their coach to come out and show themselves being better or being closer to the best version of themselves than they would be to the worst version of themselves, if that makes sense.
It does. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We got someone else on stage. We got Zach. Hey, Zach, can you hear me?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity. I was just going to ask, how much do you think NHL teams in general look at managing the energy levels over the course of a full game, because it feels like that's something, it would be silly to let that slide or not look at that. And it really feels like this team this year is finishing the game stronger than they're starting it, right? And I think there's more behind that than just preparation.
You're talking about sort of the sports science of it?
Yeah, I guess so. And also just a trend with the Habs specifically.
Well, the Canadians and teams in general all have either sports science departments or people. The Canadians have Adam Douglas runs their sports science for them. He works with sort of the strength and conditioning coach, Dale Lablins. And it, there's, you know, there is a lot of attention paid to it, but the collective bargaining agreement does not allow, like the Canadians, actually, you know what? I don't even know if they do that anymore. That's actually a good point. They used to have wearable tech, this catapult system that they wore during practice. And the sports science team would collect all the data from that through practice. And there was a certain sort of load bearing number and sort of baseline of peak energy that they would sort of refer to and be able to use notably in injury recovery. So if a player got injured, you'd have to wait for him to get to a similar baseline to know that he's necessarily ready to go back in or what have you. So, but during a game, it's a good question that I don't really have a good answer for. I'm sure there are teams that look at that quite closely. I don't know the extent to which the Canadians do, but in terms of your specific question, like why are they starting so poorly? I don't know what that. I don't know if that has to do with energy management more so than a mental sort of something they need to monitor mentally, because it's true that it's been too frequent this season where the Canadians are not ready to play when the puck gets dropped, and it's that comes to me more so than any sports science factor comes down to the compete of the players and their preparedness by the coaching staff. So there's really, those are the main factors. And I think what this season is going to reveal, especially with the way things are going right now, is you know, the young core of the team, the guys they've identified, like it's incredible to me the extent to which the Canadians losing Kirby Dach has just thrown everything completely out of whack. He's one player, hasn't even proven himself as being like a star caliber player in the NHL. Lots of potential, lots of things to like. But without him, so many things have gone awry. And which is kind of where the Canadians are. They just can't absorb the loss of an important player. And so, but the guys who are there, Suzuki and Caulfield in particular, with the guys with the long-term deals, but like a guy like Gouley, like guys who are part of the future, plus the veterans who are supposed to be leading the way, the guys who are supposed to be nurturing this young talent to become that, like guys like Gallagher, Anderson, you know, Matheson, these guys, they can't allow that to happen, like as consistently as it has. So, and the coaching staff can't allow that to happen as consistently as it has. Like something has to change. So it's a fair question. I don't think this is a really great answer to it, but to me, it's not really an energy deployment or an energy output question. It's more mental than physical in my eyes, and it's something that they need to fix. And so, so yeah, we'll see. But it's been too frequent this year. I agree.
Right. Interesting to think about for sure, because it just feels like it's been a bit of a shift from maybe a couple seasons ago. I don't know if it's
yeah. They used to come flying out of the gates and then wear out as the game went on, and it's funny because their strategy, like the way they're built, you know, they sort of, and I always go back to this, but you know, they're sort of built on the premise that we will wear you down with our depth. Like we will wear you down by coming at you line after line, short shifts, don't care about matchups much. Our fourth line is better than your fourth line, and we're gonna keep coming at you. And as the game goes on, that will pay off. You know, so you might have better top end talent than we do, but our bottom end talent is going to allow us to wear you down and win the game at the end. And that's just not the way it's playing out. Like if it, you know, under that, you should have sort of an even baseline of performance, or even come out in the first period even harder than normal, just to kind of weather that initial storm from the opponents. And we haven't seen that at all. And quite frankly, yeah, in the third period, they've just fallen apart in many games. So it's curious, and it goes back to the previous, one of the previous questions about their identity. Like, that's the identity they want. They want to be this team that wears you down with their depth. And you look at the line map, you look at the way the lines are set up tonight, and Marty said it's to create more balance and more depth in our lineup. So you have Josh Anderson on the third line, or you have, there's different ways to achieve that. But you would think that it would allow you to get a good start, and it would allow you to finish games stronger. So, but yeah, I don't know the extent to which teams actually monitor that. It's a good question. I'll try and get an answer at some point.
No, that was awesome. Excellent answer. Thanks for the insight, Arvin.
All right. Thanks, Zach. All right. I'll take a few questions from the chat, and then I'm going to cut it off. So, Solomon, it was pretty cool to see Slafkovský get a goal and an assist in front of his dad recently. What are your thoughts on this current development and growing confidence? Okay. I could talk for half an hour about that. Alex, I will not be doing a 15,000 word deep dive into his tape job, but thank you for the suggestion. But Solomon, I personally, listen, in my mind, Slafkovský's development is going fine. And it wasn't going fine the last time the Canadians were in this time zone. That Vegas game that we just referred to, he was the one dark part of that game. He was completely invisible. Following game in Arizona, same thing. He was in a bad place, no confidence in himself, and was behaving as such on the ice. Did not look like an NHL player. So what you see now is a guy who's a lot more assertive on the ice. He's a lot more decisive. He is not visibly thinking on the ice anymore. He's pulling out fakes. He's doing little shoulder fakes. He's challenging defenders. He's a much, much more confident version of himself. And I actually had a chat with him this morning about just his priority on shooting. Like, every time he's asked, oh, do you think you shoot more? He's like, yeah, everyone tells me I should shoot more. Trust me, I want to shoot more. But some of the best plays Slafkovský has made this season, in my opinion, was him holding the puck an extra second and sliding a pass over to someone, using his body to shield the puck, using his reach to create a passing angle, and setting someone up. And so, he kind of said, yeah, that's going to come with confidence. But that is a part of my game. It's always been a part of my game. I want it to be a part of my game. And, the shooting emphasis is just because that's what I'm working on right now. But I mean, it's when I get to my full development, when I get to a place where I feel confident as an NHL player, I'll be able to balance the two, because his natural tendency is to be a playmaker. And that's what he likes doing. And that's where he feels he's most effective. So he's really self-aware as a 19-year-old kid in the NHL. I've had a lot of conversations like this with him. And he's a very, not only self-aware, but he's just extremely real and just smart about where he is himself, and he's gotten better at that, because he used to think he always sucked. Whenever he came off the ice, he used to come after a game, every game, and he'd just be like, yeah, I was terrible tonight, when in fact he looked great. So I think he's kind of turned a corner in the sense of evaluating his own game, and it's pretty interesting. There's not too many 19-year-olds who are able to do that, and I think he is. And so I'm not particularly worried after the last number of games. I think he looked every bit the part of an NHL player, and actually he was asked this morning about this notion of going to the World Junior Championships, and he said, oh, the World Championships? And I was like, no, I didn't ask him, but I was like, no, it was the World Juniors. Like, World Juniors? And he started laughing. He's like, no, that part's behind me now. So I don't think he has any interest in going to the World Juniors, for anyone who thought he should be going there. But thanks for the question, Solomon. I'll take a few more here. Jim, hey Arpin, what's a third goalie worth on the open market? What's a goalie worth on the open market, Jim? That's actually a question that is worth asking. It's not quite, listen, goalie trade returns on goalies have generally been pretty soft. When you're talking about a third goalie, You know, if the Canadiens trade a goalie, all three of their goalies have something holding, weighing down their trade value. Sam Montembeau is unsigned, so you're essentially trading him as a rental. Unless you allow the other team, I imagine you're referring to Edmonton, but any team, to negotiate with him on an extension, you're not going to get a huge return. You're going to get a return that's commensurate with a rental player. Yes, he's a goalie. He's shown potential, but he really doesn't have a long track record. So I don't know what the value is. Caden Primo has no track record. And quite honestly, if he had been closely scouted, which he had been in the American Hockey League, he is not given any indication that he will ever become a competent starting goaltender in the NHL. Yes, he's looked promising this year in his sporadic activity, but he's not proven. There's no way a playoff team would acquire Caden Primo and say, "Oh, our goaltending problems are solved." You just can't say that with him at this point. They might be. They just as likely might not be, if not more so. So, to answer the question, and Jake Allen obviously has the big salary number. You know, he has a lot of qualities that you would want, but he's been injury prone over his career. Has never really shown that he can take the starter's role and run with it. Has always been more of a tandem guy, which I guess maybe an Edmonton situation would be fine. Like just taking some of the load off Skinner would maybe allow him to find his game. So maybe that would work, but with their cap figure, it's his cap figure and the extra year on the deal and everything. It's just like, I don't think there's that much value there. So I think if the Canadiens trade a goalie, if they're able to package it into a larger deal, then maybe the return could get maximized. But we've seen goalies go for not a whole lot many times over the years because no one in the NHL has any grasp of what a good goalie looks like. And to many management types, it is a total and utter crapshoot who's good one year and who's not. There's a reason why Tampa Bay is running with the two goalies that they have waiting for Andrei Vasilevskiy to come back, because they are not convinced that there's any goalie out there available that is necessarily going to be any better than the guys that they have, even though the two guys that they had going into the season were completely unproven. They're like, we're going to roll the dice with these guys because there's like a subset. There's elite goalies. There's really bad goalies. And then in the middle, there's this wide range of goalies that exist in that middle. They're constantly shifting back and forth. They're 1 year, a guy can be right at the top of that middle group. And the very next year, he could be right at the bottom and there'll be no explanation for it. And no one will be able to see it coming. I mean, Christ, like the Calgary Flames a couple of years ago, going to the playoffs with one of the best goalies, a Vezina caliber goalie, Jacob Markstrom, and just completely loses his game in the playoffs. Like, how do you plan for that as a manager? So my opinion is that if the Canadiens trade a goalie, which I think is still an if, it's either got to be part of a bigger trade for them to get some sort of return that's interesting, or it's going to be underwhelming as a return because managers just don't trust goalies. And that's just the reality of it, and I don't really blame them for it. So we'll take a couple more. That's what Jeff Hull. Curious about Marty's – this is from Ralph. Curious about Marty's lineup choices. It seems an obvious combination to experiment with is Monahan between Slavkovsky and Caulfield. When a few fans would very much like to see that, yet it doesn't happen. We see some right-wingers line up next to Suzuki on the top line who we wouldn't think of as top-line players. Is that simply because of a lack of available talent or Marty being different? A separate question is the seeming lack of structure on the team leading to wide-open opponents and high-danger shots. Is this a failing or a focus on other aspects like development? Thanks, Arpin. I enjoy your viewpoints and articles. Thank you, Ralph. I appreciate that. yeah, Monahan between Slavkovsky and Caulfield. I mean, I think Marty broke up the Monahan line in Boston for the first time. Monahan had his worst game in a Canadiens uniform in that game. It was quite historically bad. I think the Canadiens had 2 shot attempts at 5-on-5 with Monahan on the ice. The Bruins had 22. No expected goals for the Canadiens when Sean Monahan was on the ice is really quite extraordinary how poorly that went. I don't think listen, I mean, Marty saw the few games that Monahan played with Slafkovský last season. You know, Marty saw that that could work. And it's, I don't think that's not going to be tried. What I like right now is that he is keeping Caulfield with, or he puts Caulfield back with Suzuki for tonight's game. Not Suzuki, sorry, Slafkovský for tonight's game. I think there's some potential there to create chemistry, even though it's not Suzuki between them. But at some point, and we saw it a couple of times this season, but at some point it'd be interesting to see St. Louis run with that, run with a Caulfield, Suzuki, Slafkovský line and just stick with it. But I don't disagree with you. Monahan, Slafkovský, Caulfield could be interesting. I don't think Marty's refusing to do it. He's only recently even started entertaining the idea of not playing him with Pearson and Gallagher, and Monahan's back with Pearson tonight. So it's, you know, I think there's time for him to try that because he hasn't really found anything that's worked up front right now. He really likes the Slafkovský Caulfield Dvorak chemistry. I think he likes it because there's not a whole lot else going on chemistry wise. So I think it's more by, but in terms of the structure and the wide open shots and the high danger shots, yeah, I think that's, I don't think that's because they're focusing on development. I just think that's been, it's been one of the many issues this coaching staff has to tackle. And there have, it's a young coaching staff, and I think that's a fair criticism of the coaching staff, that there's no real veteran experienced coach who can kind of address several fires at once. You know, Marty himself on Monday kind of said, you know, it's sort of like a roof that's leaking and you fix one leak and another one pops up. Well, the last 2 days he spent fixing the same leak. You know, he's been working on just two straight days on the forecheck. I just saw a graphic go by from Stathletes. Megan Chaika tweeted it and showed that the Canadians give up the most rush chances in the league by a pretty decent margin. So there are definitely some defensive issues that need to be addressed. Some of that's personnel, and what's apt about your development question is like guys like Caulfield, you know, a lot of his development they're doing with him is off the puck, is away from the puck, is without the puck, is trying to get it back, winning battles, being good in your D zone, and being responsible in the neutral zone and snuffing out those rush chances. So maybe there is something to the fact that development is costing them in some cases, but it's definitely something that they need to clean up from a coaching standpoint and from a structural standpoint. Let's see. Do you think Hockey Twitter will ever move to Threads? Seems hard to justify staying on X, but there seems to be a first mover problem. Yeah. Jacob, I have a Threads account. I thought we were going to move to Threads. I mean, is Meta that much better than X? Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm in Canada. Like, I have a problem with, you know, Meta's ban on. I don't think it would affect me because I work for The Athletic, and so I think my links would run there. But, you know, there's an issue where if you're a Canadian media outlet and you can't share your work on a platform, it's going to be hard to get the Canadian hockey media to move onto a platform where they can't share their work. So that's, I think that's kind of the one that's, Thomas, you wanted to hear that too. So yeah, it's pretty disappointing. Yes, I agree. It's not pretty disappointing. It's extremely disappointing to depend on a platform that is run by a man who is so unhinged and whose values I do not agree with at all. But unfortunately it remains the most efficient. We would need like some sort of all mass movement somewhere. And, you know, there was the Blue Sky thing for a while, which I guess people are still on. And actually my brother had some of his friends ask, you know, if I could go on Blue Sky. And I can't, for me, my personal thing is that I cannot be on multiple platforms all the time. I only have so much bandwidth. I'm not a big social media guy in that sense. And so, I think if all of hockey Twitter or hockey media or hockey, the hockey, you know, community could just come to a vote, decide where to go, I'll happily go there, wherever that is. But for now, it's, you know, the thing with Threads is also like, did I really want to start building up like the team, the people I'm following and all this stuff? Like, it just seemed like a lot of work. It just seemed very overwhelming, but I agree. Every time I see something that Elon Musk tweets out, I kind of want to leave. here, I'll take one more, and then I gotta run. But let's see. Let me pick a. Let's go with Angelo here. Sorry, I know there's a lot of questions in the chat, but Angelo, this season is looking more and more like a carbon copy of last year, with having a respectable start to the year, losing key players to injuries, requiring long absences, which causes havoc in the makeup of the lines and deep pairings. Looks like another wasted year of development for young core players and team as a whole. Very unfortunate. Seeing all the players on IR, as management should have considered getting a jersey partnership with the Red Cross. Yeah, that's a good one. Yes, there are similarities. I think some of the similarities are, you know, the good start to the season was somewhat schedule-based, and it was interesting to hear Marty kind of acknowledge that on Monday, how he kind of knew that they would get a bump from the way their schedule was set up, not necessarily the teams on it, because I don't think the Canes should look at any team as being easy. But just with the way the games were spread out, they had four games in the first 2 weeks of the season. It was a very, very favorable travel schedule, everything. And that with that trip to Vegas, it was going to start to get very difficult. And we're seeing that now. You know, as long as Juraj Slafkovský and Caden Gooley and Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki, and he's, you know, obviously Doc is gone, and that's a very legitimate cause for concern. I mean, this guy, by the time he plays again next season, will have played basically two games in like almost 2 years. I mean, with his entire time in Montreal, you know, he's barely played any hockey. And so can you count on him as being a core piece? Like, how is this going to affect his development? I think these are all very legitimate questions that the Canadiens need to start asking themselves and figuring out. But to me, from the outside, that's an issue. But we are seeing growth in Juraj Slafkovský. That's for sure. And no matter how down on him people get, he's growing as a player. And, you know, the Canadiens are going to be facing the Los Angeles Kings here on Saturday. You know, check out Quinton Byfield and how he's doing. Now, Quinton Byfield's 6'5", but a bigger guy, rangy, who had to learn how to use his physical gifts at the NHL level effectively. But as I mentioned before, a playmaking type of guy. Who's not defined by his size. I think Slafkovský could not grow into that type of player, but could have that type of evolution as a player in terms of timeline, in terms of how long it takes. Even Alexis Lafreniere is showing some good things now, you know? And so there's something they've said about players who are under high... And that's a perfect case study in the sense that Byfield has the relative anonymity and lack of scrutiny of Southern California. Lafreniere has been under an intense, glaring microscope in New York, and obviously Slaf under the glare of the Montreal spotlight. You know, sometimes these guys need time, and if Slaf is able to stay all season, if Gouley's able to, these important future pieces, like as young as the Canes are, you look at the team right now, you see Slafkovský, you see Suzuki, you see Caulfield, you see Gouley, Doc, who's obviously not playing, Newhook just because of his contract. That's about it. Like, as far as guys in Matheson because of his contract, but even then, I mean, who knows in a couple of years if they want to move on from him or not, I'm not sure. But those are the guys kind of that are on the team right now that are going to probably be part of the solution at some point. A lot of the guys who are going to be part of that solution aren't on the team yet or haven't even been drafted yet, frankly. So as long as those guys are around, and right now you're only missing Doc from that group, I don't think it's a wasted year. You know, any growth that any of them can do, I think this is a big year for Suzuki. Like, frankly, he's got to kind of show who he's going to be in the NHL. And you know, he's 24. He's been around a while. It's not to say that there's been anything bad, but if this is kind of the guy he is, that's fine. He'll be a good NHL player. But if he has greatness in him, if he has like some kind of star quality to him, it's got to kind of come out this year for him. So there's things going on that are relevant to the Canadiens' future. And as long as people are able to see those things without getting overly bogged down in how the results go or stats in certain cases, but I think in Suzuki's case, it's pretty fair to expect some numbers and some production and some evidence that he could be, say, a point-a-game player in the NHL. But sort of keep things big picture and not get bogged down in the small picture every day, I don't think this will be a wasted season for the Canadians, at least not the way it stands right now. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. I appreciate the great participation again. This was fun. Again, I apologize for not doing one of these over the last few weeks. It honestly just basically slipped my mind. It's not part of my routine. I'm going to try to make it part of my routine. So Wednesdays generally will be a day that I do these. I really enjoy them. It's fun. It makes me feel like a talk radio host, which, you know, I've always kind of wanted to do. And yeah, enjoy all your questions and your interactions. So please come back the next time we have one, which should, in theory, be next Wednesday. But until then, enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the games this weekend. And I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.